I develop my kataguruma so I can throw in all kind of direction. I have action reaction. That's why if I pull forward and then I throw you backwards. When I pull you back, the side is the same. So I have all kinds of direction, so nobody knows which direction I will come in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Judo Edit podcast. It's your host, Melissa Budiato, and today I would like to introduce you to Rok Draksic from Slovenia. In collaboration with the University of New South Wales Judo Club, you will get the chance to listen to what it takes to become the world judo number one. For 1 year straight, Rok brought home a medal from every single international judo competition he entered. Oh, and did I mention that he went to the Athens, London, and Rio Olympic Games? Throughout his career, Rok was renowned for being one of the fastest and most dynamic fighters on the tour, often using his kataguruma to secure success in the under 60, 66, and 73 kilogram categories. Now, the audio quality is not the best on this one, but once you start listening, you'll forget all about it because Rok's stories are going to get you so motivated, you'll want to go out and start doing shadow uchikomi right away. My friends, before we start, I wanted to run something by you. Have you ever thought of starting your own judo club? Because, you know, you've done hundreds of breakfalls, and thousands of uchikomi, and maybe it would feel great to pass on all that experience. Well, if you are based in New South Wales and starting a judo club is something which has crossed your mind, then listen closely. Judo New South Wales are offering free workshops for all you soon-to-be coaches so that you can get started straight away. And no, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm actually trying to connect you with financing, free mentoring, and free marketing guidance resources. So, if you've been feeling the itch to inspire a new generation of judoka, click on the link in the description below and you could be running your own dojo by this time next year.
Rocky, it's great to have the chance to interview you because you have one of the most interesting judo careers that I've come across. One of the interesting things is the story of how you started judo. So, could you share with us how you started judo and the first time you saw judo?
Yes, it's a quite interesting story. When Marian Fabian came to our school. Of course, judo was known in Slovenia. Nobody knows judo. Everybody was thinking karate, this is karate. Nobody will train. But somehow, all of my friends from the class started to train. But my father didn't let me to start because we have a big farm, so we needed to work at home. That time was people was not so much for sports. You must work in all sports. Okay. And then, okay, somehow I didn't tell to my father that I train. And luckily, my coach, ex-coach, he let me that I didn't pay because we didn't have money for training. And then after 3 months, I come to my father. I say, you must buy me kimono because I have a competition. And then he couldn't say no. And then he buy me a competition. And this is how the story begins.
Wow. And so how did you go in that competition? How old were you then?
I was fifth. This was first competition. Mm-hmm. And then from second competition, normally I won a lot of tournaments. One funny story, because I was training with others, so they didn't let me on the competitions. So the Fabian need to make in my this judo license that I'm 1 year older. So I have maybe 5 years. 5 years I have. And then I come, I think it was the end of older children, for I think under 14, and then I come to competition and they open my book and they say, you couldn't compete, you're too old. And I say, no, I'm not too old. And then we saw that I still have this birthday from before. And then we need to, okay, come on, please, your ID, show I, this was the mistake. And then from then on I have. That was
That's good.
That's so great. And so you have your correct age now on your documentation, I assume.
Yes.
Watching videos of some of your fights, you look like you like to do judo that's quite fast and with lots of movement. How did you develop that style and why do you prefer it?
I think we, the Slovenians, are familiar about this style of judo because we know that we don't have enough partners to fight. And so we needed to develop our own system, so which is more aggressive and to have a big endurance. Because, like I said, we don't have enough partners like Japan, France, or like this. So if you want to beat them, you need to have a little bit different style. And, of course, that means also hard work.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's something that in Australia we relate to a little bit. We don't have as many training partners. So what are some of your tips for training when you're basically just training with the same people and you don't get much diversity. How do you force yourself to get better?
I also read some books about this, but for the system is our mentality is to work more than others. I know back now it's everybody, it's only recovery, only, I don't know, less, it's more. But I think in judo, you also need to train a lot. So we have like, okay, everybody do like this. Okay, I will walk 1 kilometer more. So do more than others.
Right. So when you were sort of still a teenager or when you were starting to get really serious into judo, what did your training schedule look like?
Normally I do 2 times a day when my professional career, or I think I started to real training when I began in high school. Then I also realized what I want to do, that I want to be a good judoka. So normal day was training at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning and then at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
And when this was all my high school, but when I went to university, I have a little bit more time. So I also do some, when I didn't have university, I also do some trainings in between. So normally between 2 or 3 trainings a day. We do all kinds of stuff because we know that the most important part of judo training is training at home, because you cannot be all the time in training camps or something. You don't have money, you don't have time, like the other big countries, and we don't have sparring, but we needed to train hard at home. So that's why we needed to develop this system. On training camps, we are ready to fight.
Mel, I can just jump in there and Veach can back me up here. I've been to Rocky's old club, Sankaku, in Slovenia several times, and the training there is as hard as you would see anywhere in the world. And that's why they've produced so many fantastic fighters, and they all have the same spirit to work very, very hard, and it pays off.
So, okay, the trainings are normally between 1 hour and a half and 2 hours. But sometimes can happen also more.
To do that 2 or 3 times a day is pretty, that's a very heavy training load.
Yes, and that was the purpose.
What do you think, you know, when you're halfway through the week and you're pretty tired, to get yourself motivated for the rest of the week's training or for the next training session?
The most important are your goals. Which are your goals? If you want to be the best, then you need to know when everybody is or sleeping, when everybody are sleeping, you need to work. So I think this was my motivation. I wake up and I said, oh, now the Japanese are training. Okay, come on, I must go also, if I want to be there. So, but normally it was quite good, good score with the Japanese. So I think I succeed.
Yeah. No, that's so great. And I've read that one of the quotes of, or one of the pieces of advice that you like to give is hard work pays off. So in your opinion, how do you know that you've reached the point where you're working hard enough, or when you're working hard and you know that you're, you know, doing more than everyone? Because it's difficult. You can't see what they're doing in Japan.
Yeah, that's why in these times, everybody are watching Instagram, Facebook, how the guys are training. And but this is just a small part of their trainings. They don't show the whole training. So you need to know this. If you want to work, when you see them working their training, this is just a small part. You don't see everything. The most important part is hidden. You don't see. So that's the mentality. So then you know you need to not just how they work, you need to a little bit more. And of course, sometimes you need to also listen to your body, huh? Because somebody will, this kind of training is okay for others.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
Yeah, for sure. So in your opinion, is it more important to be talented or to work hard?
I think work hard. As I learned in Celje or Slovenia, we all know this is 50,000 people city. So it's impossible to have so much talented sportsmen. It's not possible. Right? Yeah. In France, they have 2 or 3. We have maybe 5 or 6 or 7 in 50,000. And also, if you look at Kosovo, the coach from Kosovo, Driton Kuka, also learned on the beginning with us. And we all know also Kosovo is very small. If somebody of you train with them, then you will see why they have so big results. Not only time.
Yeah, for sure. One of the listener questions here is from Tara. So Tara's asking, how do you deal with being nervous before a fight, before a competition?
The nerves, I think, are important with the training you make. If you know you trained less, then you'll be nervous more. If you're trained enough or hard, then your self-confidence is big. And then it's much easier to fight in competitions.
Yeah.
So I think also this can also develop something on trainings.
And I guess for you personally, Hayden's asking, what is your favorite throw?
For sure, Kataguruma.
Kataguruma?
Kataguruma, this is for sure. It was quite a story about this Kataguruma. When before I was also fighting when the legs are allowed to grab. And then until 2009, they were allowed it. And I throw a lot of people with a grabbing leg. But before, when I was starting to teach Kataguruma, I didn't grab the leg. And I know 2004 or 3, when I was cadet, one guy asked me to grab, why you don't grab a leg? And then I throw everybody with a leg. And then they changed the rules in 2009. And they say, okay, Rocky's Kataguruma is finished. He will not throw nobody. And then they didn't know I was, when I was young, I was training without grabbing leg. And I just switched and then I throw even more. I think I didn't saw the percentage of my throws, but I think I was winning more with Kataguruma after the...
I've seen your Kataguruma many times, Rocky. It's very, very good.
How long did it take for you to practice that Kataguruma before it could be world class?
Oh, I never counted the uchikomis I made.
Too many to count.
Normally it was okay. You work and try with on the training, but the most important part was after the training, when everybody was finished, and I just to remember I was very tired and everything. And I said, okay, just some uchikomis, just to a little bit to adapt my body. It's tired, and I think this uchikomis was the best for me to develop my Kataguruma. It's 10, 15 minutes after or weights or hard Dondori session. I think this was the best for me.
Yeah.
Rocky, did you make Igor be your Ruke for that?
Igor, all the time, it was Urshka, Igor, Matyas. Every time I ask them, please, if we can continue just a couple of minutes. Yeah. The most uchikomis I made was after the training was with Ushka. She was also a hard worker. She also wanted to train more.
Yeah, and I guess this next question is actually for Ivica. Ivica's trained with Rocky a couple of times. So, Ivica, what does it feel like to be on the receiving end of a Rocky Kataguruma?
it's very fast. So, from memory, you're just suddenly on the ground. he moves around a lot, like his movement and intensity, just about the most that I've felt in anyone I've done randori with. So it's quite getting shaken up abruptly, and then the Kataguruma is pretty fast after that.
If I can jump in, I develop my Kataguruma so I can throw in all kind of direction. I have action reaction. That's why if I pull forward, and then I throw you backwards. When I pull you back, this and the side is the same. So I have all kinds of direction. So nobody knows which direction I will come in. So that's why I could throw everybody, because they know I'm winning with Kataguruma, but they didn't know direction I will go in. That's why I made so much points.
Hey, my friend. If you've made it this far through the episode, you are probably the type of person who is willing to work hard to maximize your judo. I recently discovered a fitness tracker you can wear whilst doing judo training. It's called a Whoop, and unlike other smartwatches or trackers, it has no glass, so it won't get smashed during randori. There's a link in the notes if you want to have a look, and a special discount as a listener of the Judo Edit podcast if you do decide that you like the look of it and purchase through the link. Make sure to also buy the special upper arm sleeve, which provides special protection for the tracker, so you can do as many breakfalls as you want, knowing that it is secure and collecting evidence of all of your hard work, calories burned, and heart rate data. Once again, you can get a special deal as a listener of the Judo Edit podcast if you click through via the link in the notes. Go check it out.
What do you think is the most underestimated exercise to develop your judo?
It's a very difficult question.
Let me rephrase that. If you had a secret training, what type of exercise would you do?
I think shadow uchikomi.
Okay.
Especially now.
Yeah, especially now. Yeah.
How do you do your shadow uchikomi? Do you do it in big sets of like hundreds, or do you do it to time, or do you do it for speed?
It depends on the period. Depends on the period. When you learn the technique on the basic, when you have a basic preparation, then you can slow on time, and then you progress, and then on the end when it's competition is coming, then you need to be faster. So you need to progress your speed on the end. But before it's slow, correct, and then you can prepare yourself and to see where are the mistakes. You don't need anyone to help you. You have your space and you can work.
Do you do your shadow which you come in with the kata groomer?
Yes. Yeah. Also,
just throwing yourself onto the ground.
Yeah, but I know I throw a lot of kata groomers, but I also have other techniques. I didn't throw so many, but I did. I mean, so I had a lot of throws, but the most winning was with kata groomer.
Yeah. For sure. And I guess talking a little bit more about your competitions now, you've had a lot of competitive experience all around the world, all around Europe, Grand Prix, 3 Olympic Games. So one of the questions that Nina is asking is, what was your most memorable experience and why?
The most memorable experience was after London, when we had, this is also quite story, because after London, I wanted to quit because I really had the bad experience in London, and then I lost with Ungvari in the second round, but this was like a referee decision. Nobody saw the shido, and I just lost for nothing, and then we all know he came to second place. And then after 2 months in December, they invite in Russia, this was the competition in Russia, they invite all the top 8 players in the world, in Olympic Games, because this European Union organized this competition. Then they asked this Ukrainian vice president, and this vice president asked Zantaraya. And then he asked Zantaraya, what do you think if we give a Rocky to this competition in this top 8? And Zantaraya say, but you know, he can win. And they give me, and they invite me. This was the top 8 competition. And the big prize was 30,000 euro. And on this competition, we come together again with Ungvari in semifinal, and then I beat him, so I get a little revenge, and so it was again.
And a little bit of prize money.
A little bit of prize money, and
excellent.
Can you remember what it was like before that fight, when you're about to fight him, and you have all those memories of the Olympics, and you're just ready to like get your win?
Yeah. It was, because Marian couldn't be there at this time, I had the Slovenian judo president with me coaching, and he's now the Slovenian Olympic president, Olympic committee, and he come to me, Rocky, you know you must, what you must do. So it was he motivated me quite a lot, and so it was a tough fight, but was one way we all know who must win. But it was hard, but I need what I need to do.
It sounds like that was quite a journey, and you got some closure there. You also reached world number 1. What was that like?
Yes, was really fast. And when I changed from London, I was fighting 66, and then I started to try 73, and then I go one competition, and then I was second in Qingdao in Grand Prix under 73. This was just 2 months after Olympic Games. And then we talk with the coach. I said to the coach, I say, I will go back down in 66. And say, okay. He say, okay. And then start January, fight in Budapest, 73, again third. And then the coach again asked me, which category are you fighting now? I say, 66. And then Dizlov is coming. And then one more, 73. And then, okay, I go Dizlov. And I was again third in a Grand Prix under 73. And then we just, after the competition, we just look at each other and say, okay, we stay 73 is better.
Yeah.
And then just 2 months after, I became first Slovenian with European.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Wow. No, that's so great.
It was 1 year without every competition I went, I get a medal. So
yeah.
Even more, 1 year and a half.
Wow.
Competition I went, so yeah. Around 10 competitions, so only Grand Prix, and I get the medal, and that's why I became a world.
Right.
That's a very impressive streak.
That sure is. Now, yeah. Are you going to ask Rocky about the bus?
Well, I was going to ask him about his coaching decision, but we can also ask him about the bus.
The bus is a good story. It was in 2014. I had a couple of guys with me, Mark Brewer and Oren, and we came to Slovenia for the Dax Cup, I think, and then we went to Kaku. And we arrived in front of the dojo is a red London bus. Rocky, can you tell us about this?
Yes, Maria, get this bus just because of the London Olympic Games, because we know this double-decker is famous in Great Britain. So he get this bus just because of Olympic Games, and he renovated. And now you saw, and you have also photos. We have photos together. It's really, it's like you can make a picnic around the bus.
It's and amazing.
Eating, and it's really amazing.
Hey, Rock, still got those photos, bro.
So do you know what happened to the bus? Is it still sitting over there in Slovenia?
Yeah, still sitting over there. Not riding anymore, but it was quite sorry because they needed to move it from one part of the hill to the other. The elevator, and was like, "Ooh, we were all praying that everything is going to be okay."
Oh my gosh! Well, at least if the bus got stuck, there are a lot of strong people to push it around, right?
No, because it was in the elevator, and they go through the main dojo, so that's why we were all scared.
It's being lifted off the ground.
From the ground, they needed to move to the ground.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay, now I guess you've had like a long career, you've built up a lot of experience, and from there you've sort of started to transition into coaching. And congratulations on just receiving that national Finnish coach position. First of all, what are some of the secret training methods that you're going to take from your learnings and your training in Slovenia to help the Finnish athletes? What strategies are you going to bring across?
Yeah, first would be mental, like thinking with the head. So they need to develop their judo on the next step. So first, I will trying to come in their head, how they train, what they needed to train if they want to be the best, and this would be the first step, because I think they are capable of good results, but they don't believe it. But first, I will try to get this mental image so they can also have good results.
Yeah, for sure.
I pick Finland just because I think they have potential. They don't have results. What is that is good for me, because I can. It's even more challenging for me.
Yes. Yeah.
More challenging, so I can prove can make good results.
Now that's really wonderful, and it'll be really exciting to see your work there and to see what difference you're going to make in the next couple of years with the Finnish team. Yeah, so Hayden's asking, are there a lot of judoka in Finland?
Not so many. They have around 7,000 registered judokas, I think, on national championships, around 200 people. So it's not enough. I think they pick me just because it's quite the same system. Okay, small country with a small amount of judokas,
yes. Yeah.
And that's why I think they pick me, because it's almost the same system. Mm. We can make it almost the same system.
Yeah, for sure.
What's your biggest obstacle as coach of the Finnish team?
To bring all the clubs together. Mm. Yeah, I think coaches, athletes, and clubs. I think this will be the main point on the beginning.
Yeah,
like I said,
yeah.
First the mental for the athletes, and then to come together so they will believe in my system, because before, we know in some countries we do by the clubs and everything. We go now centralized, so the coaches and athletes believe in our system.
How are you going to bring the clubs together? It's from what I gather, it's a big problem everywhere. You know, segregation of clubs.
Yeah, with the program, yeah. With the system, with the system of trainings that they cannot offer in the clubs. I think this system will bring a good judokas for which we will want to train. So it's their decision.
Yeah.
If this is 5, 10, 15, or just one, but I think who will want to cooperate sooner or later will have some results.
Yeah. Yeah, and Rocky, it sounds like that would almost naturally filter out which ones are hardworking for you. Yeah, so the last question, I know we're running out of time, but, you know, in the next couple of years, what excites you about judo?
I think this is also this the great eight that IGF are talking about, because you know the world are changing now, but these great eight values that they develop, and I think this is the most important. So friendship, everything. So I think this will be the most important, not just competition, judo family. I think the judo, the European Union have a slogan, judo more than sports, and I think
that's very true.
So we can cooperate, make a good friendship, and fight together and still be friends.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed listening to that interview with Rok Draksich. If you want to hear more about the training methods and mindsets of elite judoka, please subscribe to the podcast and share the episodes with your friends. The more listeners, the more high-quality guests I can get for you to learn from. And if you haven't already, go follow The Judo Edit on Facebook and Instagram. And here's a sneak preview for you. The next episode will be a round two interview with US judoka Hannah Martin. If you recall, I interviewed her for episode one of this season, and so round two features all of the questions I wanted to ask but was too scared to ask the first time. So, go catch up in the meantime, and I'll be back with more judo stories for you in a few weeks. This is Melissa Budiato, signing off.